Life Show, and I'm your regular host for the show, Robin Daly. I'm the chairman and founder of the UK registered charity Yes to Life, which for more than a decade has been opening up options for people with cancer and supporting them in accessing the benefits of integrative medicine. Today, I'm looking into the links between alcohol and cancer, and I'm going to start by talking over Skype to Rachel Clark, who's a nutritionist and the health promotion manager at the World Cancer Research Fund. Hi Rachel, thanks a lot for coming on the show today to talk about the relationship between alcohol and cancer.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Okay, so first of all, just to say a nod to the great work that the WCRF is doing in bringing light to the many ways we are giving ourselves cancer. Just one of those issues is alcohol, which for a variety of reasons is becoming an increasing issue. So I want to start off, I mean, after decades of sensationalist headlines from the tabloids telling us about things that are either giving or saving us from cancer, quite often the same thing a few weeks apart, plenty of people might say that it's all media hype, so why worry? What would you say to them?
So I think, the media hype, I completely understand that, and that is something that World Cancer Research Fund, try hard to battle against. Because although the media might say that one week alcohol is good for our health and the other week alcohol is bad for our health, as you say, the scientific evidence actually hasn't changed that much in the last 20 years. But the media like sensational headlines and will often put out headlines about studies that aren't very strong. But World Cancer Research Fund look at all the evidence worldwide on the lifestyle-related risk factors for cancer and make recommendations for how people can reduce their risk. And there's overwhelming evidence to say that any amount of alcohol will increase our risk of developing certain cancers.
Mm. Okay, so the longer view is worth listening to.
Yes, absolutely. Mm.
So maybe you can start off by telling us what you think the reasons are that alcohol is an increasing threat to our health as a nation.
Yep. So as I was saying, we know that alcohol increases the risk of cancer. And in particular, it's bowel, breast, liver, mouth and throat, esophageal and stomach cancers.
Okay.
And okay. I think we are becoming more aware of the links. But in a recent survey we did, we actually found out that 43% of British adults aren't aware of that link between alcohol and cancer. Mm-hmm. And in that survey, they were prompted as well. Alcohol was one of a list of multiple choice answers. So people, didn't tick that. They weren't aware. So that this is why we're, incredibly worried about helping people to make informed decisions that will reduce their risk of cancer.
Right. So it's an education matter in the main.
Yes, so I think that it really shows that there needs to be a lot more awareness and there needs to be more national awareness campaigns around the dangers of drinking. But there's other things that the government can do about minimum pricing of alcohol. So we know that alcohol today is actually 54% more affordable than it was in 1980. So I think that's a bit of an issue.
Right.
And also around marketing of alcohol as well. Maybe there's an argument for more restriction on alcohol marketing, minimum pricing, better labelling on alcohol. There's lots of things that could be done to increase people's awareness so they can make informed choices.
So would you like to see it treated a little bit more like tobacco is treated?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a good comparison. So again, in this survey, 85% of people were able to say that smoking increases the risk of cancer for the vast majority of people. And I'm surprised that it's not even more, I think everyone knows that now. And we would really like people to be as aware of the link between alcohol and cancer risk as they are of smoking and cancer risk.
Yeah, well, I was just about to say that in amongst all the cancer and health messages, there are a few that everyone, provided they're not making a profit from the sales, would generally agree on. And I would have put smoking in there, but it's only 85%. Can't believe that. Anyway, smoking, asbestos, traffic fumes, there's some things that people don't argue about generally anyway that are bad for you in this way. But alcohol's not such a done deal. So where in the catalogue of cancer risks would you place alcohol?
So quite high. So in terms of lifestyle risk factors, so those around our body weight and physical activity and our diet, after not smoking and being a healthy weight, not drinking alcohol is the most important thing people can do to reduce their risk of cancer. So it is way up there.
And how much is that to do with a sort of population-based studies, which is telling us that, well, a lot of people drink alcohol and a lot of people drink a lot of it. So therefore, from a countrywide perspective, that's one of the biggest things we could do to reduce incidences of cancer. Is that the kind of information it's based on, or is it based on individual studies of people?
Most of our research is based on, population studies, and we're able to compare populations who kind of drink more against those who drink less. And in the UK, we know that if everyone was to stop drinking alcohol, around 21,000 cases could be prevented every year. And to put that in perspective, that's about one in five cases of breast cancer that could be prevented.
That's a lot.
And that's the UK preventability statistics.
Okay. I'd like to look in a little, sort of tease out the way in which alcohol is a cancer risk. Things can be a risk because they're carcinogens, basically, and they are known to cause cancer. Or things can be more indirect in that they create inflammatory conditions that could lead to cancer, but could also lead to a whole range of other conditions depending on the person that they're happening in. So whereabouts does it fit in this range?
How alcohol increases the risk. So scientists aren't completely sure of the exact mechanisms at the moment, but there are some strong theories about how it increases our risk. So one is that the ethanol in alcohol can be converted into a toxic substance called acetaldehyde. And too much of this can build up in the cells when we drink, and this can damage the DNA in the cells, which then can lead to the cells becoming cancerous. So sort of direct damage to the cells through this toxic substance in alcohol. Another theory is that alcohol acts as a solvent and can physically help carry other carcinogens into cells. And this is why smoking and drinking together is even more harmful, because the alcohol can act as a solvent to carry through the carcinogens in the cigarette smoke into the cells. And there's another theory, which is that too much alcohol can reduce how much folate we absorb into the liver, which can result in big changes in the cells for the liver, which again can result in the liver becoming cancerous.
Okay, and that's the range of ways. So they're all fairly direct, in fact, those, aren't they? They're aiding and abetting directly with cancer rather than just creating a kind of generally unhealthy body which is prone to cancer or to heart disease or to anything else.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say that's right. One indirect way is that, alcohol as well is very high in calories and doesn't provide any nutritional benefit. So for some people who maybe drink a lot, this could lead to weight gain. And then being overweight or obese, that can create that environment in the body that can promote cancer development. So in that sense, it does have an indirect role.
Okay. So can we talk now a little bit about the safe levels? They've been, these are government safe levels, they've been dropping recently. So would you say the messages are correct, they're overstated, they're misstated or understated?
So in terms of cancer prevention, we would say that there's no safe amount of alcohol to drink. So we would say to avoid alcohol completely for cancer prevention. But we know that's not realistic for a lot of people. So our advice is that if you do drink, to follow the government guidance of no more than 14 units a week. So that's around sort of seven drinks a week, seven pints of beer or seven small glasses of wine. But again, there's a sort of dose response when it comes to alcohol and cancer risk. So the less you can drink, the better. So our other advice would be to cut down as much as possible, and to kind of be a bit of a savvy drinker. So when you're out, choose smaller serving sizes or dilute alcoholic drinks with sugar-free soft drinks like a spritzer or a shandy, and alternate between alcohol and water when you're out. Those sorts of tips just to reduce your intake as much as possible.
Mm. Okay, well, look, I want to do a bit of a tabloid switch around here and just look from the other direction. The Blue Zones organisation, which I don't know if you know them, but I mean, they hope to be able to show you how to add 10 years to your life by looking at the habits of the longest lived humans on the planet. And so they go around looking for these blue zones on the planet. They've identified quite a few where people live extraordinarily long. And and they say they look at the way these people live, and they, in a whole variety of ways, which does include what they eat and drink. And the diet is definitely down there as one of the most important things that's related to how long they live. But they do actually ask the question about alcohol. And all these places, they actually have some alcohol. They don't have lots, but they do. It's part of their sort of culture, and they have it regularly, probably every day, but not in excess. So this kind of brings out, it's part of the confusing picture, if you like. You know, the WCRF has concluded from looking at studies that actually no alcohol is best, but this is a completely different kind of result. And so what I wanted to ask about is really the tendency is with looking at things that cause cancer is to look at them singly, look at them one at a time. And if, for example, you took alcohol and you placed it in amongst a lifestyle which is actually exemplary, you know, you live there on the cliffs and you're breathing fantastic air and you're working outside every day and you eat your own homegrown organic fruit and veg and, you know, all this stuff, it's a very different context to somebody who has a very poor lifestyle and lives in the middle of London. Do you think this could be one of the things that leads to these rather different ways of looking at things, is that they're being treated singly, but of course they're actually one element of what we're doing in life. And of course, if you have a bad lifestyle, if you reduce any one of those things, well, it's a good thing. But within a very healthy lifestyle, then it's a rather different picture.
Yes, I see what you're saying there. And with that organisation that looks at those people that you know, live for incredibly kind of long, healthy lives, you know, it sounds like there's only so many of those people, and they're asking about their diet and lifestyle, but it's not general population. You know, they're not looking at hundreds and thousands of people. No. These are very specialist kind of one-off cases almost. Whereas the research that has been done on alcohol and cancer is looking at whole populations of, you know, millions of people. Yeah. And it is, you know, very clear that alcohol increases the risk of cancer. And in terms of putting it into, you know, having it as a singular on its own or amongst other lifestyle choices, like you're saying about somebody who might be, you know, overweight or have a poor diet and drink alcohol. Mm. Again, when it comes to alcohol, that it is very clear that there isn't a safe limit for cancer prevention. So all the evidence suggests that the more you drink, the higher your risk. Of course, like with everything, it doesn't mean you're going to get cancer. No. It just increases your risk.
Right, that's important, yeah.
Of cancer.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, a similar kind of thing I've seen is where somebody's picked apart yes, weight is put in there very much as a key factor in elevating your risk for cancer. But actually, they sort of went back and chewed over the figures again. And they found out, of course, overweight is very often associated with lack of exercise and a very poor diet. And it's actually those three things which make up the risk, really, and that the people who are overweight but actually had a good diet and did get exercise, their risk wasn't increased at all. So it's interesting to actually have an overview, if you like, of
the way people are living, and I'm proposing, rather than getting too hung up on one thing, which of course you're doing at WCRF, you're looking at the whole lot. But do you actually do this, any kind of amalgamation of all these lifestyle factors?
That's right. So we have 10 recommendations for cancer prevention.
Okay.
And they're the kind of 10 ways of how people can reduce their risk. And limiting alcohol intake is one of those recommendations. But they fit broadly into three key recommendations, which are having a healthy diet, being physically active for at least 30 minutes every day, and to maintain a healthy weight.
Right.
And it is important, you know, that the more of those recommendations we can fulfill, you know, the better, the more we're going to lower our risk. But also just by making a few changes, that they're going to add up to improve your health as well. Mm. So it's about being realistic as well. You know, there's very few people that live the very, you know, perfect lifestyle and follow all these recommendations for health. But it does make a difference just following a few of these things.
Okay. So can I just come back to something you said earlier? You mentioned about producing a kind of particularly deadly cocktail by following our much-loved national habit of drinking and smoking at the same time. So you explained a little bit about why that is in that case. Is this true of alcohol and other things we do?
It may well be, because alcohol, like you say, one of the theories is that it can act as a solvent, which can then help carry other cancer-causing substances into cells. So, for example, we know that some, you know, processed meat contains nitrates, and that can increase the risk of bowel cancer. So it could be having a similar effect there, but I don't know. And those would need to be looked at in more detail.
Okay.
And at the moment, like I say, it's just a theory. So these mechanisms, it's one of the research priorities for our Cancer Research Fund to explore those mechanisms in more detail. But at the moment, they really are sort of theories of why there's this correlation.
Mm. But the fact is, it's there. Well, particularly with the alcohol and the smoking, you know for sure, don't you, that the two together is really bad news.
Yes.
So that's not a message to be avoided. You know, on the basis you don't know how it works necessarily, it doesn't really make much difference. It does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. And so can we go back? You were mentioning the types of cancer that are associated with alcohol. You had quite a list of them. And could you just run through them again and just say anything you know about why these ones are particularly related to alcohol?
So the cancers that are related to alcohol, or that alcohol increases the risk of, are bowel, breast, liver, mouth and throat, esophageal and stomach cancer.
Okay, well, some of those seem quite obvious. You know, you can see how, all right, you're pouring this stuff down your throat. So your mouth and throat and your bowel are likely to all be affected by that. And as is your liver, which is trying to detoxify the alcohol all the time. Breast cancer is not so obvious. Does anybody know why this is particularly linked with breast cancer?
Yeah, so that's right. Breast cancer is the most common cancer for women in the UK. And we know that 1 in 8 women will develop the disease in some stage in their lifetime. So it's you know, a really huge one, and it's important that people are aware of the link between alcohol and breast cancer. And like you say, it's not an obvious one, because it isn't, you know, in the mouth or the esophagus or where alcohol might have direct contact.
Hmm.
And we know that alcohol, or drinking alcohol, 1 in 5 cases of breast cancer could be prevented if nobody drank alcohol. So I mentioned some of the theories already about why alcohol increases the risk of cancers, such as it reducing the absorption of folate in the liver and acting as a solvent for other carcinogens. Another reason is that alcohol is thought to increase levels of oestrogen in women. And we know that breast cancer is a hormone cancer. And one characteristic of a cancer cell is that it multiplies out of control. And in certain types of breast cancer, high circulating levels of oestrogen can make this more likely to happen. So that's why, another reason why alcohol has this effect on breast cancer. Mm. And there's no safe limit for alcohol in breast cancer. So a small quantity can increase a woman's risk. But that's not to say that they will get cancer. It just increases their risk of getting breast cancer. So if people want to know more about how they can reduce their risk of breast cancer and the link with alcohol, but also the link with other lifestyle risk factors that they can address, they can find out more information on the website, and that's www.wcrf.org.uk.
Okay, great.
Going back to those cancers, and I just got some statistics here of the approximate number of UK cases that could be prevented each year through not drinking. So with esophageal cancer, it's estimated that about 48% of those cases could be prevented if people didn't drink alcohol.
Wow, that's half.
So that's really, really big.
Yeah,
and about 40% of mouth, pharynx and larynx cancers. So again, those ones that are kind of directly involved in the drinking in your mouth and your throat. Mm. And people often pair alcohol and liver cancer for the reasons you just mentioned. Mm. And it is important, but actually about 3% of liver cancer cases could be prevented if nobody drank alcohol. So it's a lot smaller when it comes to liver than it is for others. And actually, being overweight or obese is a bigger risk factor for liver cancer than drinking alcohol.
Okay. Liver damage, nonetheless, is a big deal with alcohol for heavy drinkers, isn't it? Which is not necessarily the same thing.
That's right. And it can lead to cirrhosis of the liver, and then that can in turn lead to increased risk of liver cancer. Mm. So breast cancer, that's another one that people are sort of surprised by, that about 1 in 5 cases of breast cancer can be caused by drinking.
Mm. It's very high. So obviously something a lot of young women should be taking note of.
Yes, absolutely. Breast cancer is the most common cause of cancer for women in the UK. Mm. And this is, really significant.
Yeah, and of course, as far as I know, the place where there's the greatest rise in alcohol consumption is young women. Isn't that true?
I haven't looked at the statistics recently, but I know, also some of the big drinkers in the UK are kind of middle-aged men and women as well. Mm. So I think this applies to everybody, and everyone could do something to reduce their risk. And because with alcohol there's no sort of safe limit when it comes to cancer prevention, this isn't just a problem for heavy drinkers, or it's something that affects absolutely everybody.
Yeah. Okay. So you said a little bit about the guidelines that everybody's not very clear on what they are. I think they obviously try to make these things as simple as they can. I mean, your guideline from the WCRF is definitely simple: don't touch it. But the chances are that most people will they'll be more likely to fall within the government limitations than that, in a way. Can you just explain again exactly what it looks like to people? It's a bit like the driving limit. Everybody's got a different idea on what it looks like. And that's not a good thing, obviously.
Absolutely. So, like you said, about the guidance on how much men and women should be drinking has been reduced recently. So it used to be 21 units for men and 14 units for women. And now the recommendation is no more than 14 units a week for men and women.
Right.
And also within that guidance, it's that these 14 units should be spread over at least 3 days, So that's taking away the have them all on one day, you know, saving up your units. And make sure you keep some days alcohol free. So in terms of what 14 units looks like, one unit is around a medium strength pint of beer or lager. So that's the other thing, you know, some beers or lagers are going to be stronger than others. So this is a kind of average strength. And a small glass of wine is about a unit. So a small glass, again, sometimes you have to ask specifically for them. That's 125 mils. Yes. And often in restaurants and bars, it's going to be bigger than that. So it could be, seven pints of average strength beer or seven small glasses of wine over a week. That's your sort of no more than that is the government guidance, but the less the better.
Do you have a percentage figure for what a medium strength beer is and average strength? Because they all have an alcohol content on them, don't they?
They do. I don't have it off the top of my head, but it's about 4%.
4%.
Is about an average strength beer.
Well, some of them do go a long way beyond that, don't they? They'll easily be twice that. So you literally got to cut it in half. That's the case.
Yes. Yeah. Then it would be a half a pint for a strong beer.
Yeah. Interested to see that the change in the guidelines then, there's no change for women actually, but it's just that they've stopped the idea that men can somehow get away with having more. Do you know anything as to why that particular piece of advice was given? Given that your advice is none, then you'd think they both go down or, you know, it's funny that one's been left as it was.
So I think the government revisited all the evidence that was out there in terms of alcohol and risk of various diseases, including cancer. And they made the decision that 14 units is the upper limit to reduce your risk of, most diseases. So it's kind of safe limit for most health conditions.
Right.
But again, they do mention that for cancer, there is no safe limit. You know, they do acknowledge that, but they're looking at the whole population and all health, but also being realistic as well. If the government was to say, don't drink any alcohol, it wouldn't be really a very realistic piece of advice for people to follow. So I think they're bringing in that as well. It's realistic and it's a safer limit for a lot of diseases.
I suppose also for the government, it has the added advantage of being a simpler message if it applies to everybody.
I'm not too sure if it was that for simplicity. I think again the evidence was just saying that for men there is no difference when it comes to risk of disease.
So do you know why they had that idea in the first place then? Was it a thing to do with weight or size or?
I'm not sure why it was 21 units to begin with and then now they've reduced it to 14. It could have been to do with the evidence that they were looking at the time. And now there's more evidence, new evidence. Or like you say, it could be that they thought that men are generally bigger and heavier and maybe can process more, but I'm not entirely sure.
Okay, so I'm somebody, say, who's concerned about my alcohol consumption. You mentioned a few ideas, the strategies and things for getting it down. I mean, is this something that WCRF is hot on, ways of actually reducing your intake in a manageable way, not going cold turkey maybe, but just finding socially acceptable ways of pulling back a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something we really encourage people to do. So like I say, we're aware that not drinking anything is incredibly difficult, especially in a culture where it's one of our main social activities. Every social activity includes drinking normally. But we have loads of tips and advice on how people can just cut down their drinking. So on our website, we have a alcohol calorie calculator, which is quite interesting. And people can go on and they can put in the number of drinks they've had, and it'll tell you how many sort of calories those drinks are worth. And it's quite, that's for some people quite a good spur to reduce their drinking. But we also have lots of tips and ideas for cutting down. So some of them might be around looking into other social activities you can do with friends and family where drinking isn't expected. So, for example, going for an early dinner and then going to the cinema afterwards, or meeting for a Sunday lunch. And for some people, they might not want to have anything to drink because they've got work in the morning. Mm-hmm. We suggest, you know, making most of health campaigns. So in January, it's Dry January. And for some people, again, they can use that to trial out reducing or stopping their drinking. Mm. It can make it easier for you to kind of set boundaries with your drinking. And also right. other people know why you're doing it. So it kind of gives you that excuse.
And you might be doing it with others.
Exactly. And that's another thing as well, that you could be a bit of a trendsetter in that area. So you could do it yourself or encourage friends and family to do it with you. If you're a parent, you can try and set a good example for your children by drinking less. And so I think more people as well are starting to look at the amount they drink, and more people are aware of the health dangers of drinking. So it's more acceptable to reduce the level you drink. So you can be a little bit of a sort of trendsetter there and set an example for people. Or just to be a bit more of a savvy drinker, like we've said. So, adding non-alcoholic options to or in between your drinks can help to reduce the amount of alcohol you drink overall, or just choosing smaller serving sizes. Those little things like that as well can go a long way over the course of, months or years to really reduce your intake.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, you're right. It's a social thing in very many ways, isn't it? And the fact that there's a beginnings of an awareness that it's not terribly good for you is actually, of course, supporting people in having less. And, of course, the changes in the attitude towards smoking have been massive. And, in a very short period, it suddenly swung. So it's kind of gone from being socially unacceptable to complain about other people smoking to being socially unacceptable to smoke amongst other people. So it can change. But, of course, with alcohol, the kind of usage is so much higher, I suppose, it's unlikely to ever make that kind of swing. But hopefully, as you say, it'll be kind of more supportive that you're wanting to have less.
Yeah, and like smoking, that took a lot of people to make that change. So not just the individual, but also, government and marketing and the industry. And the same thing can be done with alcohol. So individuals can choose to drink less. But as you mentioned earlier, the government can bring things into place like minimum pricing, better labelling, more sort of national awareness campaigns like there have been with smoking, and putting restrictions on the marketing of alcohol like there was with smoking. So there are a lot of things that can be done to gradually shift and denormalize drinking so that it isn't such a strong part of our sort of social culture in Britain.
Which it certainly is, let's face it. I mean, you need to look at the proportion of a supermarket that's given over to alcohol. It's pretty significant, isn't it?
Exactly, and there's always kind of stories about the cost of alcohol and how you can buy litres of very cheap alcohol. And that's where minimum pricing would play a big role.
Yeah, and if you wanted, say you were struggling to actually reduce your alcohol, what would be the best places you go to get some help? Would you be able to advise on that?
And so I think if you're concerned about your drinking or concerned about someone else's drinking, there are specific websites that you can go to. So there's DrinkAware, which has more information and advice, and Alcohol Concern as well would be another good resource to have a look at.
Okay, that's great. All right, well, look... thanks very much. It's been a very interesting and informative chat. Yeah, thanks for talking to us today on this subject, which obviously is time that Britain woke up to a bit more.
And it's been great to talk to you. And if people do want to go on our website and try our alcohol calorie calculator, or have a look at our tips for reducing alcohol intake, or just to find out a bit more about the role that alcohol plays in cancer risk, our website is www.wcrf.org.uk.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Rachel.
Thank you.
Well, the standout fact from that interview was the strong link between breast cancer and alcohol. To find out some more about this, I'm now going to talk to Colin Shevels from Balance Northeast.
Hi, Colin. Thanks a lot for joining us on the Yes to Life show today.
It's a pleasure.
So I've just spoken to Rachel Clark at the World Cancer Research Fund, all about alcohol and cancer. And one fact leapt out at me, the significant connection between breast cancer and alcohol, which I certainly didn't realise about, and I suspect that very many others don't either. You work with an organisation that's called Balance Northeast. I wonder if you just start off by telling us, well, what is Balance Northeast and what do you do within it?
Balance Northeast is a regional, you might call it an alcohol control office. What we do, we're funded by the local authorities in the northeast of England, have been since 2009. And really what we're trying to do is apply some of the lessons from tobacco and how we've managed to reduce smoking levels, both across the country, but particularly in the northeast, where they've been falling faster than the national average, and try to apply some of that learning to alcohol. Really what we're trying to do is denormalize the relationship that, that the UK, but particularly our region in the northeast, has with alcohol. You'll be unsurprised to learn, Robin, that we have a fairly unhealthy relationship with alcohol here in the northeast.
Right. Well, it's not great down in London either, I must say. Okay. Yeah, and what do you do particularly?
I'm the director of the office. We have a small team of five people looking at a variety of things. I mean, if you were to break down what we do, one area that we work on is really to make people aware of the harms that alcohol can cause so that people can make informed choices about how much they drink. You know, this government at the moment is completely reliant on individual choice, people taking the right choices mm-hmm. about their lifestyle behaviors. Well, if they don't have the information to make those choices are uninformed. That's and true. People are taking risks that if they had the information, they may choose not to take. So that's one area of work. Okay. I mean, another area of work is, you know, in terms of practice, you know, within public sector organizations and what should they be doing to tackle alcohol harm. And the third really is to look at the evidence base about how we can reduce consumption. Because frankly, the only way to reduce the harms that we see is to reduce consumption of alcohol, look at the evidence base, the independent evidence base, and advocate for changes in policy to local and national government. So it's quite a wide brief, Robin, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So most of the cancers associated with alcohol, they're fairly much what you'd expect, the mouth, digestive tract, the liver. Breast cancer is, however, not such an obvious connection. Would you like to say a bit just about how concerned people should be about this connection?
Well, people should be aware. You know, I don't want to scare people unnecessarily, but the fact is that, you know, that when it comes to the increasing risk of breast cancer related to alcohol, there's no such thing as a safe drink. You know, there's a dose response relationship, if you like, Robin. The more you drink, the greater the risk. So it's something that women should certainly be aware of. And the worrying factor at the moment is it's something that women aren't very aware of. You know, Cancer Research UK did a survey recently which indicated that something like only 1 in 10 people are aware of the link between alcohol and cancer in general. In the Northeast, we've been running mass media campaigns highlighting the link between alcohol and cancer more generally, but specifically in the last couple of years between alcohol and breast cancer. And whereas the awareness levels is 1 in 10 nationally, it's about 1 in 4 in the Northeast. Still too low, but at least more people are making more informed decisions when it comes to their alcohol consumption.
Well, that's quite an impact you've had up there.
Sorry, I was just going to add, Robin, that the problem is that for some reason, you know, raising awareness is not seen as a valuable contribution to the public health debate. And I think that is completely wrong, particularly in an era when everything is being put down to individual choice. You know, people are saying, you know, is what you're doing directly changing behavior? Difficult to prove, But the starting point for that is people being aware of the risk. And at the moment, not enough people are aware of the risk.
Mm, absolutely. Well, that criticism was levelled at government and not taking what you're doing seriously enough. Is that right?
It's certainly levelled at government. Government are doing nothing when it comes to, or next to nothing, when it comes to making people aware of the risks of drinking alcohol. And that's not just cancer. As I'm sure you'll know, Robin, it's alcohol is linked to 200 different medical conditions and injuries. It's heart disease, stroke, and so on, to name just a couple. And people aren't as aware of the risks as they should be. Everyone knows that, you know, if you're going to be drinking heavily, it can affect your liver, and they've heard of liver cirrhosis, and awareness of that is high. But people are not as aware of the levels of risk associated with other conditions. Leaving aside the health harms associated with alcohol, the government has singularly failed to proactively communicate it to the new chief medical officer's drinking guidelines, which came out in January this year. And awareness levels of those new drinking guidelines are incredibly low. And a lot of the reason behind changing the guidelines was because new evidence has come up over the last 20 years about the link between alcohol and cancer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so is there anything you can actually tell us about why there should be this connection between breast cancer and alcohol?
Well, Robin, I'm not a medic, but there are a number of, as I understand it, processes. Our bodies, alcohol is converted into a toxic chemical called acetaldehyde, for example, and that could damage DNA. It can increase the levels of some hormones, such as estrogen, and they give ourselves instructions of when to divide, and unusually high levels of estrogen can increase the risk of breast cancer. So there are a number of different mechanisms. You know, I agree with your original premise that somehow people can understand that alcohol might be linked to mouth and throat cancer, for example. And actually, when it comes to mouth and throat cancer, if you smoke and drink can help absorb some of the cancer-causing chemicals associated with smoking. So there are a number of different mechanisms that are associated with the increased risk of cancer linked to alcohol. But as I say, I'm no medical expert, and I would advise your listeners to go onto websites such as Cancer Research UK or Breast Cancer Now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how about men? I mean, of course, men do also get breast cancer, and they're also known for a lot of drinking. Do you know anything about a link there?
There's no evidence of a link between alcohol and breast cancer that I've seen. Now, that may be simply because the incidence of breast cancer in men is that much lower, and the research hasn't been done. But as far as I'm aware, there's no link that has been proven to date between alcohol and breast cancer in men.
Right. And how about any of the other hormone-related cancers that men get, prostate cancer, anything like that?
Again, there was a report came out recently potentially showing an association between alcohol and prostate cancer, but I think it's really too early to call. That's what the experts are saying, that more work needs to be done to look at that association before we can say with any level of confidence that drinking alcohol is linked to prostate cancer.
Okay, fair enough. And what are you able to tell us about the current state of things in the UK? Do you have any figures regarding consumption and rates of diagnosis, ones that could be attributed at least in part to alcohol?
Well, I mean, we do know that alcohol-related cancers and alcohol-related breast cancer has gone up. And if we're looking at alcohol-related breast cancer hospital admissions, we've seen those increase by 30% in the last 9 years. And they now stand at something just over 30,000 across the country. So we are seeing an increase in that. When it comes to consumption levels, I mean, we're drinking twice as much as we were in the middle of the last century in terms of pure alcohol. Mm. We have seen some reduction in consumption levels since the mid-noughties, if you like, about 2004, 2005. And certainly the introduction of the alcohol duty escalator by the government, which was increasing alcohol duty higher than inflation between 2008 and 2013, will have had some impact on that. But unfortunately, this government has scrapped that alcohol duty escalator, has actually reduced duty to some extent, and there are early signs that consumption levels might be starting to go up again, which of course is worrying because there's a direct link between levels of consumption and harm. I mean, I think what's really interesting is that our consumption data tends to underestimate how much we drink. If you look at how much alcohol is sold in this country, there's enough alcohol sold for all drinkers to be consuming well above the recommended weekly guidelines.
Right. And when you say all drinkers, you mean all adults?
All adult drinkers, yeah. And I think that those would be 16 and over, actually. So, yes, I mean, what we do is we sell a lot of alcohol that, you know, if you ask people how much they drink, they tend to underestimate how much they consume. And there's a gap there between how much is sold and how much people admit to drinking. So unless there's a big stockpile somewhere that we don't know about, we're underestimating how much we drink.
All right. So it's a serious situation, and it's obviously great that you're doing a lot of work to raise awareness. Maybe we need a bit of a southeastern version of your organisation as well. Anyway, thanks very much for coming on the show and adding your weight to this matter.
It's a pleasure, Robin. Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope that's been informative, and whilst not putting a complete damper on your coming Christmas festivities, may make you consider just how much alcohol you take in over the holiday. As usual, you can find links to resources for today's show on the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. Click Media Centre in the left-hand sidebar and then choose UK Health Radio. Next week, I have an inspirational guest to round off 2016, so I hope you'll be able to make a point of joining me again. Meanwhile, keep in touch with Yes to Life and with me, Robin Daly, on social media. Goodbye.